welcome to Pretentious Favorites. I'm Cale Hawkins.
I'm Cameron Wilhite.
And how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. This week is Missions Conference at Biola, and it has been amazing. I work for photo and video.
You've been killing it.
I have been working shifts like all day long. So it has been tiring, but it's been really, really fun. The speakers have been great. Worship has been great. And it's been an awesome, awesome experience so far. I'm just feeling a little tired.
I get that. Yeah. I mean, you've been working almost every event, right? I think you've only taken one session off.
Yeah. I didn't work session 3, but every other one I've done.
So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. How's your week been going?
Good. I realized editing episode 2 that we like say stuff about currently or plans and all, and yet that's not going to be for another 2 weeks or 4 weeks or so on, because it just builds. Like, you know, this episode essentially isn't going to come out for another 4 weeks after this point.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that the next episode is episode 3, which I haven't even started editing because I'm lazy.
For reference, the day today is March 17th.
Yeah. So when this uploads, it'll be way later. And people will be like, what are you talking about, Missions Conference?
The 4th of July.
Yeah, they'll be like, what are you doing? Are you guys that lazy? The answer is yes, but we don't want you to know it. But today we have video for who knows how long.
Today we have video.
Yeah, we're praying the video doesn't, like, the batteries don't die.
Yeah, we have one camera with, like, 3 full batteries and one camera with half a battery and no spares and no chargers. So.
Yeah. Shout out to Cameron's roommate. Really doing us a solid. Yeah.
Shout out to Nico Rulli. What a legend.
Yes, sir.
We borrowed the camera last minute.
And, also, I, like, looked in the mirror today and I'm like, wow, it's been a month and my beard's grown back and I hate it. I like my facial hair to an extent. But there's another part of me that's like, I want it to not grow in a millisecond.
Yeah.
So I can actually have a clean, like, smooth face for a while.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen anymore.
Yeah. And it's also getting hotter. Yeah. It feels like it's like 100 degrees out right now.
Yeah. I realized, like, how cold my face got after I shaved. Mm-hmm. Like, the moment I shaved and I, like, walked down the hallway of hope, I'm like, whoa, I'm feeling like a breeze on my face.
I feel the breeze.
Exactly. I'm like, what the heck is this? And now it's just sweatiness and hidden acne. At least that's the nice thing. Hidden acne.
Hidden acne.
You hide the scars.
That was the nice thing about face masks.
You know how I got these scars?
No.
Acne.
That's the movie we're watching next week. It's a hidden gem. No one's seen it. Have you guys ever
Sir,
heard
I will
of
let
the
you
Dark
choose,
Knight?
I will let you choose the next film. Just make it an actual hidden gem. I'm not against you choosing.
Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King.
Oh my goodness.
Next week.
You're just like angry at me because I chose one movie out of 4 so far that you didn't, didn't want to see.
I enjoyed this movie a lot, and we'll reference what it is in a minute. I just, overall, these kind of movies are the movies that I typically steer away from. And so to watch one was a unique experience, and I will admit that I was a total wimp.
You were in a wimp.
And I was freaking out the whole time. So,
with that introduction of it, which I think is perfect, the movie for this week was Oculus.
Yep.
A movie that came out roughly in 2013 that I've seen before. You haven't seen, of course, as the theme has set to be until you choose another movie, which, again, you can choose the next film.
Yeah.
But it's a very good horror movie. As you can tell, Cameron hates horror movies.
I hate horror movies. I hate horror games. I watched that movie and I was like, I want to watch a Disney movie right now.
And then there's me, who is obsessed with horror movies. I think I saw this movie when I was like 10.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't react.
I'm sure.
I thought it was great.
I think I should probably preface this by saying Oculus is probably not that bad to those of you who enjoy horror movies. But to me, who like the worst one I've seen is like A Quiet Place, then it's like I was on edge pretty much the whole time, worrying about what would happen next. I jumped a few times. I silently cried a few times. Not really. But overall, the movie was actually really good. I just was so focused on what was going to happen next and if it would freak me out that I wasn't paying that much attention to, like, how good the movie was. And then finally at the very end, I was like, okay, now that was a really good movie.
In many senses,
I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah. In many other senses, I did not enjoy it a lot.
Yeah. It actually has a solid cast, like we talked about. I'm going to butcher these names. Karen Gillan, Brenton Thwaites. And Katie Sackhoff. Sackhoff? I don't know. There's a H-O-F-F at the end. But I've seen these actors in other, like, smaller stuff as well, and they're pretty solid. I very much like them. Yeah, it's it's a very good film, and I really like it. It's very fun, playful, with sound. I think, actually, to be honest, the sound is the thing that I dislike. The only reason why is I don't like it when horror movies force fear, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean is, when horror movie kind of builds up, like, suspense and stuff with music or so on, where there doesn't need to be. Because there was one moment where you were watching, you're like, why is there scary music? And it was a completely normal scene. Like, she's staring at the mirror, and she's with her husband, but there's not much going on.
Yeah.
And it's kind of trying to give an eerie feeling instead of what I think should have been more just simply tense.
Yeah. There were a lot of tense moments, and I found that those moments, the most tense moments in the movie, were when there was no sound at all. And I'm sure that's a super common thing in horror movies, but being someone who isn't very well versed in them, I found those to be the most, the parts where I was the most uncomfortable, because I had no idea. There was no music to lead me on, there was no music, like, to lead me away, there was nothing to give me a hint of what would happen next. And so when there's no sound at all, it was like completely, like, on guard, like, totally freaked out by what was going to happen next. And those were the scenes that I was most freaked out by, and those are the scenes that did their job the best, because I wasn't able to pick apart what I thought would happen next because of the music.
Yeah, and one thing I've talked with people about is jump scares for a main thing, which
I got jump scared once or twice.
Yeah. I'll get it. But one thing I always say about jump scares, of how to tell if a jump scare is good or bad, is this. There's Annabelle Creation, which I know you've never seen, but I'll, like, explain a moment. And then there's Five Nights at Freddy's. Five Nights at Freddy's, it's a great game. It was a very original story and now dragged on through 20-so games for the sake of lore. Shout out to Jordan Brown. he loves FNAF lore. But it has just simple moments where, you know, there's static, there's a little laughing echo or whatever, and then just the jump scare out of nowhere just comes up and screams at you and then cuts to black.
Yep.
And that's it. And then in Annabelle Creation, there's a scene where this little girl she has a crutch, so she can't, like, move very easily, and she has to get to a stairway, and it has one of those, like, old people, like, elevator things along the stairway.
The stair lift, yeah.
Yeah, 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 that's it. And what happens is she takes it and, like, starts going down it, trying to, like, get away, because she doesn't see, like, a creature necessarily, but she sees a black abyss and, like, can hear sounds and can feel a presence, basically.
Yep.
And as she's going halfway down, it stops, and then slower than it went down, slowly goes back up as it keeps, like, zooming in on the, like, shadows and stuff, and eventually comes to a shot where it's her facing the camera, and over her shoulder is the black abyss over the corner. And she slowly turns, and then with no music, she just is thrown in the air out of shot, and it goes silent, and then we see her fall back into shot all the way on, like, down to the first floor. And that's way more scary, greater buildup, because even though you know it's coming, unlike FNAF, you hate it more because of that reason.
Hmm.
It's that, it's almost like rip off the band-aid. It's like, just get it over with. Stop it. And it doesn't, it won't go away. And so you're just waiting and waiting. And then when it finally comes, you're like, I knew it. You sons of guns. How could you do this to me? And I think that's way more entertaining and fun than just throwing random jump scares in or forcing an element to do such a thing. Such as in Oculus, I'll admit the sound kind of did that a bit.
Yeah, I found that those were kind of things that I was doing in the movie to sort of cope with what was about to happen. I kept saying out loud, oh, this is going to happen next. This is what's going to happen. And I was narrating the story, how it would go. Obviously, spoiler warning, as always.
Of course.
There's a scene where the mom is, like, choking the little girl. And finally, she realizes, oh, I'm I'm choking my daughter. This is wrong.
Yeah.
And she comes back to reality. And I was there clutching my head. And then I said, she's going to get shot. And then literally the next second.
Like a millisecond.
The subtitles, I don't know why we had subtitles on, but subtitles on the bottom just said gunshot. And then you just hear, boom. And I'm like, no. I called it out. And it was funny. But yeah, those are, I agree. I think the scenes were, either the scenes where I couldn't predict what was going to happen and there was nothing to help me, like we talked about the music, or the scenes where I knew exactly what was going to happen and it just wouldn't happen. I hated that. There's so many scenes in the office with the mirror. You're freaked out because they're in such close proximity to the mirror. Anything can happen. It's just, it has such an eerie, like an eerie presence. And those scenes are freaky because you don't know what's going to happen, or you know exactly what's going to happen. It just won't happen, or it never does happen. And that's almost worse than it actually happening. The previous people who had died from the mirror, they keep popping up. That's something that happens throughout the movie. So many times I was just saying to myself, all right, they're going to turn around. She's going to be there, whatever. Just let it happen. Like, come on, just pop up. Like, just show up and strangle them.
Just do it already.
Yeah. And then they didn't. And it was frustrating because I know that after one creepy moment, there's going to be like a little break in between creepy moments. And that was what I craved, was the moments where I knew nothing bad was going to happen.
You're just like, kid, just give me a breath.
And I didn't really get that till the credits, so I think
it took the entire film for you to get that moment.
So I think the movie did its job pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, and something that greatly complements that like feeling of I don't know what's going on is in the match cuts / cinematography and the editing. Because I think the editing of this film must have been a nightmare for the sake of kind of like Inception. You just don't know where you are.
Yeah.
Because it so fluidly goes back and forth from flashback to current predicament in which it's trying to show repeating events and how life repeats itself. And it's so painful because you're like, all right, they're like, we're in modern times, right? Like this is current day. Get out of the house. And then you see them start running for a door, open a door, and then, oh, wait, no, they're kids. Wait, no, it's this happening again. And you're like, wait, what's going on? Are they going to get out? What happens here?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was definitely the part of the movie that I was most impressed with. I was just totally worried about what would happen next for like half the movie. And then finally you said, I think you said, oh, man, it's so cool how they continuously jump between being kids and being adults.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I realized, oh yeah, like I'm watching a movie. This I'm not about to die. I'm not with them, whatever. And then I finally kind of got put back in my seat. I realized, you know, I'm watching something on a screen and I'm able to appreciate the things they did well. And I think that was something that they did very well, was the transitioning. And I agree, that must have been a nightmare. The director was probably the only one who knew it was happening.
He's like, no, you got to put these clips after each other. And the editor's like, what?
But they were here. Another.
Yeah. It's like, wait, it's but like, this is them as, this is the kids. And he's like, yeah, I know. Like, exactly. And then they run the same way as the adults. And it's like, why is the present version of him in the same shot as the young version of him in the bathroom?
Yeah.
No. That makes it. It's supposed to be like that. It's like, excuse me?
We're time traveling. So,
that's not how it works. Do you know how to edit? Do you know edit, sir?
But yeah, there's a lot of those movies there's a lot of those moments throughout the movie. And those are really, really impressive shots and overall ideas, because it shows you the similarities between past and future. And it also, I mean, it just paints a beautiful, like creative decision that they made in order to show how this relates to the past and the future. And I think it works really well. It shows the horrors of the past and how they connect to why they're so freaked out in the future. And I mean, especially so once they show the stories of people in the past who have died. But it works so well to go back and forth because it shows us why we should be so freaked out as well.
Yeah. It's also a situation of like, don't let your past scars define you necessarily. I mean, don't get me wrong. We've talked about this before. I believe in the good and bad memories make you who you are equally. Mm-hmm. If not the worst memories make you who you are more, because you grow from them. And here it's kind of letting your scars take you over you or define you rather than you growing on them. And that's what happens because Kaylee is so fixated on taking revenge and destroying the mirror and stuff. And it's like, why? If you didn't destroy the mirror, then what makes you think you can do it now? And also, I do think they could have destroyed the mirror, but she was so fixated on trying to, again, fix her past that she had to videotape it, do all these precautions and take studies and all this stuff. And it's like, no, keep the tarp on it, set up the anchor, that's lunch. Go get lunch, leave the house, get lunch, and do not say any of your ideas out loud so that the mirror can hear it. You know what I mean? And so that's like the situation. Whereas Tim is like, you know, she's like blames Tim because she thinks Tim is brainwashed now, which to an extent he is, because it's the situation of it actually turned out to be real. But he also is just trying to say, okay, whether it's real or not, why are we here? Why do we need to be so fixated on this horrible past when now we have the opportunity to go live out our lives and enjoy them and let it, not to be harsh or like kind of cruel in a way, but let it be someone else's problem, you know?
Yeah. One thing that I kept saying throughout the movie was just leave the mirror, like just walk out of the house, just walk away.
Yeah.
Like, you're right. She's so fixated on destroying the mirror. They're so fixated on fixing their past, reclaiming, you know, their parents' honor or whatever. But in reality, all those things are in the past. And as sad as they are, like, we're not discrediting how sad that could be. Their childhoods are, like, so messed up. Like, oh my gosh, getting chased around the house by, like, by zombies, bro.
Not even your zombies, your literal parents.
Yeah, I know, but, yeah. Parent-zombie fusion possession, whatever.
Is that what you would name this movie instead of Oculus?
Parent zombies chase children on the house for 2 hours.
Yeah,
but after, I mean, in the end they could have just walked away and they wouldn't have had the problems. He goes back to jail at the end.
I know,
like, her fiance's dead, she's dead, he goes back to jail.
It's such a like heartbreaking moment too, because even I, when I first watched this movie, I was like, oh, she didn't kill her husband, because earlier in the scene they like did the reference thing, right?
Yep.
And then they debate you, and I'm like, you, no.
The iPhone shows reality.
Technology is the truth.
Pulls out the iPhone 4 or whatever it was.
Fahrenheit 451. Just technology is truth. Obey technology. No. Yeah, it's so sad. It is, like, I think it's funny, because I said this to you when we finished the movie, like, yeah, we were too happy. We watched, like, Big Fish, you know, Stories of Your Dads and Peter Pan. And sure, we got a little weird with, like, you know, Green Knight, but now we're just full-fledged sad. Do you get the message? History repeats itself, suckers.
Yeah.
Like, take it in full-fledged.
Whether you like it or not, like, it ain't up to you. Good luck.
I actually just watched today Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, another great movie. I'm not going to spoil anything, but that one message of that film is if we forget history or focus too much on it, we're doomed to repeat it to an extent. Almost saying nostalgia forces repetition, which what's his name talked about last night in his sermon. I forget his name.
I wasn't there last night.
Oh.
That's the one that I didn't go to.
Eli. Okay. Eli Bonilla.
He found it.
Hopefully I said your last name right. Not that you'd be listening to this. But he talked about that briefly, was nostalgia and us being doomed to repeat it or not learn anything from it if we're so fixated on the past rather than being ready for the future.
Hmm.
So that's kind of what this film is saying. Like, hey, you can... She actually turns out very successful too by how it seems. But she's so fixated on this mirror and proving your dad wasn't crazy, in which it's like, hey, I get that, but you kind of just gotta shrug it off. Yeah, like, you just gotta shrug it off to an extent.
Yeah, because we see them, what seems like they're so normal at the start. We know his past. He gets out of like a mental hospital or something like that.
It's like a mental institution for younger men and youth adults.
Yeah, so one of the opening scenes is him getting out of that. We see him walk up to her. They hug. They go get lunch. Things are so normal. And then she says something along the lines of, do you want to help me do it tomorrow? And it's like, what? You know, the whole tone change. The whole tone shifts. And then we're obviously led on to understand that there's something really off going on here. And then obviously we go and we start getting the flashbacks. And I think that was another thing the movie did really well, was sort of build the history, build the story. It didn't just reveal everything about the past to you straight away. It built it throughout the movie in relation to the events that are happening in the future. And I thought it did that really, really well. We see some pictures at the start when she's describing the cases of her parents and what happened to them. And then later on, we actually see it happen, but we don't see that for like an hour after the fact. And it builds up, and we know what's going to happen to the parents at the very end. We have no idea how it gets there. And seeing that build up with relation of how things slowly get worse and worse for them in the future, I think that was a really, really great parallel. I think they did that really well. I think that was probably my favorite part of how they did the movie, was slowly revealing the backstory in relation to how the future is. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, I will say it's stronger later on, I think, because of the fact that we get the reveals, but also because in the earlier moments, it felt almost harsh cuts. Kind of the moment where you said with the sister being like, do you want to do it? It very much harshly cuts the tone, which isn't bad because I get it. Like, it's very fixated on her mind. Yet we still see like such a dramatic shift that feels a little unnatural. And even in another moment where she's talking with him and he goes, why don't you just smash it now? And she just says like, oh, you don't remember, do you? And then it just hard cuts to them trying to, you know, smash it with the golf clubs.
Yep.
Whereas later on, Even those sharp cuts are more smooth, whether it's lights switching on and off when he's upstairs looking at the one light and he sees his past, and then you hear a light switch and it switches back to present day. It's a little smoother because of that. Whereas a little earlier, there's some moments where it feels kind of mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I think they do a very strong setting tone and setting up for moments way later on, as well as like right in the moment.
Yeah. Speaking of them trying to destroy the mirror, you have defended multiple times that you think that it could be broken. Do you want to dive into that a little bit and explain how you think that would happen or why you think it could be done?
I mean, I already said it. I think if it's a sentient being or demon of sorts even, then it communicates like we do. There's nothing been proving where it can read your minds necessarily. It can get in your mind and, you know, give messages because we hear the whispers. But until that point, it can't possess you necessarily, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So if it can't hear your thoughts, then don't say your plans out loud in front of the mirror that has the drape off it.
Yeah.
When it is unsheathed. Why would, I mean, yeah. Because they, even when they had, like, every time they had a cloak or tarp or something over it, nothing happened technically.
Yeah.
But even in the warehouse, when she rips it off, the moment she looks in the mirror, something moves behind her.
Yep.
If she left the tarp on, I don't think anything would have moved necessarily. At least out of what we're given, nothing indicates that. So don't say your plans out loud. Set up the anchor very quietly. Set it right there. Immediately leave before it gets any ideas. And then watch your watch. Have a donut. Drink some coffee. Wait.
Yeah.
And then pay the fine because you just broke it. You know, $20,000 auction piece. That's all you need to do.
Yeah.
And considering how well off she seems, you can afford, you know, one mirror broken. You can afford one thing at your firm to be broken or lost. You could even pull some BS like, oh, yeah, we send it to these guys. And maybe just, you know, if there's somebody like screwed you over one time, you just fill in some fake paperwork and get them.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not saying, you know, blackmail or, you know, illegally fraud someone, but I am.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounded like.
I'm just kidding, though. But I'm just saying, you can afford it if you're really this committed. So why do you have to go through all the trouble? Why do you have to prove to yourself, because I doubt you're going to show this to anyone else, honestly, that your dad wasn't crazy?
Yeah.
Shouldn't it be a situation of, you know, you wasn't crazy and that's good enough? I don't know. Do you think it can't be broken?
I think that it can be broken. And the reason is because we've seen evidence that it's been damaged and we see that it has a crack in it.
Yeah.
And that happened, I believe, when the dad was pointing the gun at the daughter and the son hits the gun away with a golf club. And then, I don't know, there's some sort of scuffle or something.
The son points it at him terrified to shoot because, you know, he's a kid. He's not going to shoot his dad.
Yeah.
And so the dad grabs the gun in his hand and pulls the trigger with his thumb, shooting himself, essentially.
Yeah. And then I think, like, the dad falls or something and cracks the mirror.
Yeah, he gets shot back and I think his head slams the mirror and cracking, giving the crack in the corner.
Yeah.
So in which I kind of would have thought there would have been more of like a shockwave or some sort of screeching of it. Exactly. Well, not even that. Just like some sort of like almost when the mother, you know, the mother tries to throw something at it and you see her, like that moment of like, and she becomes possessed.
Hmm.
I kind of would have thought something like that would have happened at least. But it doesn't. And then they just you hear sirens and the kid gets arrested. I'm like, okay. I mean, you still won, but I don't know. Your first injury, I feel like the mirror would have screeched or something.
Yeah.
It's still a demon, right?
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that it can be broken. I think that you could come up with multiple theories on how it could be done. You could, I'm sure many people have different opinions on whether the mirror can read your thoughts or whether certain techniques, certain attempts would do better than others. But I think overall, I'm not sure if there is some symbolism in there between maybe the things that it affects sort of creates almost like the dad's new personality, the possession, how when he is defeated, maybe even he decides that last piece in him of being an actual dad decides, I'm going to do this because I'm clearly harming my children. I'm clearly doing something wrong. And he's the one who pulled the trigger because he just said, I want to end it. If that was an act of resilience, if that's the thing that harmed the mirror. But I think overall it could be done. And I'm sure you could come up with multiple theories about it. But I think that it is shown that there's multiple things that could be done to defeat the mirror, and maybe that is where they should make a sequel.
So you'll watch the sequel with me?
No, I will not.
No? But what if it's a hidden gem?
Honestly, if they did come out with a sequel, let me ask this first. Is there a sequel? Because if I agree and there was a sequel this whole time and you're just tricking me into agreeing with you, then I'm going to be upset.
Let's find out.
I'm stalling for Kale again. While he looks up information about whether or not he can freak me out with another horror movie.
I'm confused because there's Oculus Chapter 3, The Man with the Plan.
What?
It's a short from 2006.
Oh.
So Oculus, the movie, came out in 2013. So that's the only other thing that's... And it looks the same way, too. So maybe this is what it was based on. Let me see if it's by the same... it's by the same guy, Mike Flanagan.
Oh, interesting.
Huh. So originally it was a short, I guess. But why was it called Chapter 3? Did he make other ones?
That'd be so funny.
I'm, like, going through more like this, and I don't see anything. Do you want to go see Chapter 3?
I don't see any legit results about a number 2. I see a few fan trailers.
That's interesting.
And a few poorly edited thumbnails.
That's interesting, though. So, it's based off a short, which I could have assumed that. A lot of horror movies are. If you've ever heard of the horror movie Light, or I think it's called Light Switch, that's based off a short film. Mm-hmm. That, full honesty, the full-length movie sucks. Short film, amazing. Highly recommend the short film.
Huh.
Don't watch the actual film.
Yeah, horror films and scary stories in general have a really, really big background in some, like, Edgar Allan Poe. He did a lot. Just, like, back in the day, like, really eerie, like...
Wes Craven, baby?
Yeah.
And my boy Wes?
Yeah, I think about... What is it? Like The Black Cat, The Fall of the House of Usher, a bunch of different...
Pet Sematary?
I haven't read that, but like The Monkey's Paw, a bunch of different old short stories that really have a big impact on these kind of movies. So, Kale, I promise you, if there's an Oculus sequel and it doesn't look too terrifying, then I will watch it with you.
Mike Flanagan, if you're watching this,
no.
Let's make Oculus 2 and force Cameron to watch it.
Mike, let's not do that.
Because Mike Flanagan's going to watch our podcast, please. Kind of diving into just horror as a genre and the community of it. I'm like I said, I'm a huge horror fan. I saw Jaws when I was 4, and I saw Nightmare on Elm Street when I was 6.
Oh, wow.
So I'm a psychopath. Not to brag.
You're a veteran.
Exactly. A veteran serial. You'll never find him. And so, one thing I learned was there's a huge... Even creepypastas and, like, horror stories and stuff on YouTube, there's a huge community. There are so many different channels that work with each other and tell stories with each other and do all these projects. Millions of podcasts and obviously movies and short films. There's so many. I mean, anything can be based off anything in horror because there's so many similar characters with different agendas or similar appearances with completely different abilities. I mean, you know, there's just in Creepypasta, there's Jeff the Killer, Laughing Jack, Eyeless Jack, Slenderman, The Rake, and then, you know, going into the storytellers of them, there's Mr. Nightmare, Mr. Creepypasta, Creeps McPasta, That Creepy Reading. There's even guys like Mr. Ballin and Nuke's Top 5, and these guys all just tackle different types of horror.
You were like speaking a different language right now.
It's so cool though. There's such a huge diverse like group. I mean, I even met a horror podcast at a film festival, a horror film festival, where I met Robert Unglin and Marian Madalena and John Landis and Rick Baker. I met them at the festival and I met a podcast by the name of Forever Midnight. And those guys are just, they're in my hometown and they've done like over 50 episodes now, just reviewing different horror movies of different scales and age and importance and stuff, going from The Witch to Nightmare on Elm Street to The Omen and so on and so forth. Such a huge community. It's so cool to see. So Mr. Creepypasta or Mr. Nightmare or any of you guys, if you're seeing this and you're interested in doing something with Biola students, please hit me up. I have stories in mind. We would love to have you on for a podcast. I will force him to watch another horror movie.
Yeah, hit Kale up. Maybe you don't have to hit me up, but if you do hit me up, I'll send you Kale's away.
And then I would be in heaven if anybody, especially like Mr. Creepypasta. That's a special moment for the YouTube viewers that'll see this in like a year when I actually make a YouTube video.
That's really cool. I didn't know that. There's a lot of things about film and film community that I'm just not even aware of. And I think there's so much out there that it's hard to be aware of all of it. Yeah. So to be able to explore a completely new genre, I think that's really cool. I think that's what film's all about. It's just people wanting to make cool movies, to see something, to be scared, to be happy, to be sad, the highs and lows of emotion.
Yeah.
And to know that there's communities out there like the horror community, which I would think would be really creepy, but I guess is actually pretty cool.
I mean, hey, man, Rick Baker did American Werewolf in London, which I think got nominated for an Oscar for its makeup.
Oh.
And Rick Baker also did the makeup for Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Oh, all right.
John Landis directed American Werewolf in London and Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Well, you've told me this.
Yeah.
I've heard this before. Okay.
I mean, horror communities branch out. We talked about this as well with actors even. Actors start out in horror movies such as Johnny Depp in Nightmare on Elm Street. You know? Horror genre is a very great base level. And those who stay in it highly exceed, from Wes Craven to Jordan Peele, you know? And then those who go beyond it, if they're able to, seem to do fairly well, I would say.
Yeah.
It's a great community because it's very welcoming to anyone once you show you care or you're invested to an extent, it seems like anybody can get in and feel very welcomed.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
All right. Future Kale editing this. We're going to check the cameras right now and then you can cut all this out.
Yeah.
Yay.
Where were we?
We finished talking about the horror community.
Yeah.
And that probably wasn't the last thought we talked about. But
No,
you were talking about a lot of actors get their start from horror movies.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of goes into the community thing. But going back to Oculus a bit, we talked briefly about, actually kind of briefly, about visually how impressive it is. Color palette-wise, it's simple. There's not much to have to go by. I'd say the strongest parts visually and editing-wise, like we said, was the match cuts and fluidity, if that's a real word, from future to present or past to present day, which is kind of weird in some moments, just because there was one part where I almost questioned if Tim's younger self saw him. That's the only moment where I go, wait, did he see an actual projection of his adult self? Because it's when he's on the bed, Tim walks in and he's looking at his younger self and his younger self looks at him, and then it kind of goes to the perspective of younger Tim looking away and then looking back and he's gone, which makes me think, were they actually looking at each other, or does Tim just remember he was staring at the door like for that entire time and then looked away for a moment because I think his alarm went off and then he looks back? That was one moment where I kind of theorized and was like, oh, was this another supernatural thing that he was getting like paralyzed in fear about, or is it just that's just the editing, he's imagining that memory? Kind of in previous moments when Kaylee sees the dog go by or Tim is staring where the dining table was and so on, I kind of thought of it as those moments, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of moments in this movie where it seems like it has all the traces of containing symbolism, but you're just not sure. It seems like so many different scenes poke at the idea of something meaning something greater, but then you're also wondering, like, are they just using these to tell the story, and do these scenes actually have significance? I mean, all the scenes have significance, but do they have significance outside of just the basic story that they're telling? And I'm not really sure. I mean, like you said, there's a few scenes in there that it seems like, okay, this definitely could represent something other than what it's the basic story it's telling. But for the most part, to me, it felt as if almost every scene was just there to tell the story. And I thought that was interesting. It was kind of refreshing just to watch a movie and not have to be confused trying to figure out what's going on, but also have just enough level of complexity of bouncing between the two stories. I found that really interesting. I could also just be making it more simple than it is. Mm-hmm. And I think there definitely is symbolism in there somewhere. I just think that they didn't use it through like the whole entire movie. And I think that was kind of helpful because they already jumped between the two, the past and the future.
Yeah, I agree. It's very trippy.
Yeah. I also think, like you were talking about with the visuals, I think they used the visuals very well to be deceptive in what they did. And I'll explain. There are a lot of scenes where everyone's sitting in the family room or at the dining table and things are brighter. Not much is happening. You feel safe because you're sitting there in the dining room with them, technically. And then it cuts to someone standing in the doorway of the office. The office is totally dark. Everything around them is dark. You're like, I'm going to die. I'm going to watch them die. And I can't do anything about it. And I'm creeped out. And then nothing happens.
It separates the world, too. Because you can feel the disconnect of the dad and his den versus the rest of the house.
Yeah. Yeah. No, every time. Yeah, that's so interesting. Because every time it shows the office, it feels like you're almost walking to another house or a whole nother, like you said, a whole nother world. It feels like wherever the mirror is, that room specifically has some sort of power, some sort of whole new realm within it. And I think that's so interesting. And even when some of the scariest moments, scariest, but like the jump scares and things like that, some of the most intense scenes to watch are when the lighting and the colors are bright and happy. And I hate that because I can't predict it. And so it did that really, really well. And specifically in the office, they do that all the time. Every scene in the office just feels like something's going to jump out at you and you never know for sure.
Or when the daughter gets the neighbor and yes. The dad, you see his nails on the like.
Oh
side.
My goodness.
I remember mentioning to you too, I said, do you see his hands? And you're like, no. I'm like, he has like 8 band-aids on his hands. And you're like, really? And you can see it later on. And then you see the door scene and all of his fingernails are just like bitten off.
It's disgusting.
Because he's just been like gnawing at them.
There's some pretty gross imagery in here too.
It is a little gnarly. It is a little gnarly. Because there's even the photos when she's breaking down previous owners. And mainly
the
dad. The
electrical wire one.
Yeah. Or the mother's wound on her lower abdomen area. Which I'm trying to think what that could be from.
Yeah.
Did they mention it in the story? I can't remember.
I don't think so.
Or was it, do you think it was like during one of their births they did
a C-section?
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm not totally sure how that works, so I don't want to.
I don't either, so that's, I don't know. But yeah, obviously she had like some incident or surgery where she had to get an incision below her belly button, like across her waist. And that's kind of a pivot point because she's very self-conscious about that, as well as, like any girl, her weight. When you hear the dad say grotesque cow and it's not actually him, it's the mirror, but you just see her like turn with absolute disgust and like almost humiliation, like, what did you just say?
Yeah,
because it does feel so out of the blue, even though they were kind of going a bit, they were tense at each other, but not enough to warrant that.
Yeah, not nearly to that level.
Yeah, so it's very interesting to see that. That's like the first point where I'm like, oh, this is getting bad.
Yeah, that was definitely the most obvious one.
Yeah.
When that happened for a second, I was like, what? All right, yeah. List of things to never say to my wife as a husband.
Is that?
Number one. Like,
number one, that stuff.
Yeah, but like you said, it's so obvious that it comes from the mirror because it's something that, even though things are on the rocks, like he wouldn't say something like that. And there's a big line between like what reality is and what reality isn't. There's the whole thing about the affair, whether that actually happened or not. And it's all the mirror. The mirror is behind everything. And everything's sort of being all the mirror is the puppet master. Everyone else is the puppets connected to its strings. So
there's a few moments, though, where I kind of get like Blair Witch vibes, because in the Blair Witch Project, one thing that made that film so highly popular, I'll tell you now, it's not the cinematography. It's not the acting. It's not set design. It's none of that. It's not even the budget. The budget was $30,000 and probably some candy bars, because what made that film so popular is it's it looks real enough and genuine enough to where you're constantly questioning, did these kids actually go missing in the woods because they just went mad? Like, they got cabin fever in a sense and just went insane in the woods? Or was something actually chasing them? And if so, what? Because the lore of the Blair Witch is a real thing. The place it's located is real. And a lot of the lore about it, like pagan witch and stuff, is actually somewhat real belief of that place. And the majority of the budget was spent on actors going door to door, looking like policemen and such, being like, have you seen this person? And hanging up missing person posters and stuff.
Hmm.
And of course, the actors went in hiding. And I don't think any of those actors did anything else after that film, too.
Hmm.
So even in this film, there's moments where Tim is kind of explaining the situations, being like, dad was having a divorce. See, there were these moments, there were clear telltale signs. And if it wasn't for in the present day moments being revealed and seeing an actual ghost in present day shots, if it wasn't for those, you could genuinely believe, yeah, it's just their skewed imagination, which is kind of cool to theorize and think about.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a movie called Stalker by Tarkovsky, I believe, from... I'm not going to guess a year because I know I'm going to get it wrong.
Is that with Jake Gyllenhaal?
No.
No? I'm thinking of a different movie then.
It's in Russian.
Oh, okay.
And it's a fantastic movie. It is really long. And if you don't like sitting through long, sort of drawn-out movies, then you probably won't like it. But... if you do like those sort of things, and I think you really like it. And
love Stalkers.
You love Stalkers.
I will gladly watch.
It's actually what inspired the Stalker video game series, if you know about
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah, like...
That's cool.
Whole, like, Cold War sort of, like,
uh-huh.
Run down. Anyway, the whole point of that movie is this guy called a Stalker who goes, not what you're thinking of as a Stalker, but someone who guides other people into what's called the Zone. And he goes in and he's explaining them all these rules about the Zone. You can't do this, you can't do that, or else the Zone will get you. You can't, like, there's all these rules, you can't do this, like, whatever. And they follow all his instructions, but the whole thing is, like, nothing ever happens. And you're sitting there the whole time going, all right, is this guy actually serious? Like, do we want to take the risk and just do it the easy way? Because he's taking on such a long path around the Zone to where we want to get. Or do we actually believe him and you know, listen to what he's saying? And that's the whole point of the movie, is what he's actually saying true, or is he just totally making all this stuff up? And it's really interesting. And I think it's kind of the same way with, like you were talking about, with the Blair Witch Project. Like, are all these things actually happening, or is it just sort of someone's figment of their imagination? And it's hard to tell. I think that those kind of stories are always really interesting to think through and sort of mull over and stuff like that.
I think that's a good place to end it. Do you have any current shout-outs or things you'd like to plug, whether it's a project you're on or friends on or anything?
Once again, I'd like to shout-out my roommate, Nico, if you know him. Great guy. Let us use his camera. It died. I don't know how long ago, so we'll see if we got footage from that. But regardless, shout him out. He's a cool guy.
All right. Is there anything you'll be doing in roughly 3 to 4 weeks? Because that's when this episode will come out.
I will be going to a winter camp for my church, filming video for it.
Oh, that's nice.
Is like the main thing that I'm doing. Other than that, normal schoolwork.
Shout out to Cameron's church.
Compass Bible Church, Huntington Beach. Check
there,
it out.
There we go.
It's pretty cool. It's like 20 minutes away.
Yeah. For me, it'll probably just be more of this. I think that's all for today. Cameron, it was fun talking with you.
It's fun talking with you.
Again, my name is Cameron, Cale Hawkins.
And my name is Cale Hawkins. My name is Cameron Willhite.
And that is all. I hope everyone has a nice day.